Hello, welcome to The Big Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all of the big tech stories of the week, the shenanigans that have gone on. Thank you for your feedback back last week about the show. We had a whale of a time. I know it was a bit long, and I'm sorry about the silent audio at the end, but I had no idea it was doing that until I went into edit, which I don't edit, I know, but you know what I mean. And thanks for Patrice for telling us that we clearly knew sod all about progressive apps about as much as we knew about Stephen Hawking's theory. Your time to come in, mate. Your time
to go. I did a fairly good section on progressive apps, I thought.
Actually, Greeny, he singled you out for most criticism.
Oh, right, great. Thanks very much. Well, that's him knocked off my Christmas card list.
Yeah, bollocks. He's in Arizona and he's German. Jesus. Joining me to discuss a fantastic week in tech. I've missed Greeny off. He's going to love that in a minute. Starting us off, Camps, how the devil are you, pal?
I'm good. Yeah, good. Been a busy week. Good to be back. I'm glad it's Thursday.
But it seems your internet is shite.
It is. It's absolutely garbage at the minute. I think it might be. I'm going to be shopping around, I think. Might even have to have a look at Virgin now they're on my street.
Are you on PlusNet?
The irony that I've just totally lost you as you've asked me that question.
Are you on PlusNet?
No, I'm on Sky Broadband.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, that's what it is. So, you're on a BT line.
To be totally honest, seems to work perfectly fine most of the week, but every Thursday night seems to bomb out on me.
It's really weird because we get, back at the old place, we used to get absolutely rave speeds on a Thursday night, which you would like, well, you'd have thought the network was low ebb for bandwidth. Mm. And then on Friday afternoon, we'd have sod all for the Max Show. Kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know why it is. Every Thursday for the last few weeks, it seems to be playing up, but no, I'll get it sorted a couple of weeks while I look around.
Are you going to Virgin Media Fibre, though?
Yes.
Good man.
Yeah, they're on my street now, so I'll have a look around, see what I can get, see what sort of prices are available.
You get the gamer package, 50 quid a month, mate. 200 down and up, unless they've done the 300 so far, in which case you get 300 and 50 up or something stupid.
Fingers crossed, because this is just silly now.
Next to him, Jeffrey, welcome home, mate.
I've really missed you guys.
Yeah, you've had a couple of weeks away. Like, how's the hip?
The hip is doing much better. I was taught a new stretch thing that actually helps a lot.
Cool. So, and just for everyone's benefit, you haven't had a hip replacement because you're old. You injured your hip, didn't you?
Yes. And so this has been an ongoing thing for years. And sometimes it needs a little more care than other times. And yeah.
Now, being an ex-copper, have you used the Martin Crane scenario? So, you know, I'm Marty Crane and I got shot in the line of duty in the hip.
Why didn't I think of that?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know, I've got a bad hip. Why? Well, I was shot. You know, like Marty Crane in Frasier? That was me.
I should have thought of that.
You should have.
I can't believe it. Hey, I have to let you know.
Oh, go on.
Angela and I were going to be in London on August 31st through September 7th.
Ah, cool. I don't live in London, right?
I know you don't live in London, but I mean, this is actually going to be my first time visiting the UK.
Well, we will meet up then.
I'm looking forward to it.
There's no chance I'm not going to come an hour to see if you come all the way from them. Not happening.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see you.
You got to tell Angela to be bloody nice to me, though, this time.
You tell her yourself.
No, exactly. That's my point. She gave me a good telling off last time I saw her.
She's just the sweetest ever.
No, she's not. Don't tell her I said that either. Next to him, it's Greeny Boy.
Hello, chap.
What's been happening in Greeny World?
I may have a job in Switzerland, so that's going to be
awesome. Fun. That's not like a bank job, I take it.
Yeah, mainly.
I may have a Swiss bank job.
I'll get a sort-off shotgun and all that. No, it's Google Cloudy stuff.
Awesome.
So we'll wait and see. It's a contract, but I like contracts.
Yeah, that'll keep you fresh.
So, you know, go in and out. And I've set myself up. I've got my pipe, my cashew nuts, which are here.
I thought they were pistachios a minute ago.
Oh, yeah, pistachio, that's right.
Okay.
And I've got some beer as well. So I've got my pod. You know, if I was to die now, I would be happy because I've got everything around me.
I've got to see you light that pipe and just try and peer through the smoke to see you during the show.
don't worry, you'll get that. You'll see it. Yeah, okay. Progressive Redbacks, I'm offended.
Let's not. We've had enough grief over that. Oh, blimey. Generally, the tone was people enjoyed the show last week, but they were... Tom said, thank you for explaining the Hawking theories. I hadn't got them up till now. Cheers, mate. And last but by no means least. Go on, Granny.
All I was going to say is I've developed a progressive web app, so there we go.
You have you?
I have.
We'll see a doctor and see if he can get rid of it for you. And last but by no means least, it's Righty Boy. Where have you got a note from your mum, mate?
No, mum, the right notes. I forge them.
I've
got a dodgy pass off. You can have that.
How you been?
I've been all right. Life's been getting in the way, which is why you haven't seen me. But now I've just realised I'm going to look twice before I cross the road and eat healthy and not drink because I want to live long enough to be in London when Jeff Gammett comes to the UK.
You seriously think you might not manage August?
No, I'm going to make sure now. I don't know who's more excited. It's either me or my wife.
What about meeting Jeff?
Oh, God. My wife said, make sure Jeff's... make sure his hip's okay, and if it's not, I'll run onto the pitch with the sponge and rub him down. She said.
Has she already?
I feel hip problems coming on right now.
Has she heard the news and come in and given you that message already?
My wife knows.
And she. Oh, have you told someone else before? You've told her. It's not an exclusive, Jeff.
No, this is totally exclusive.
Wait, so how does your wife know?
Right. No, she knew about Jeff's hip, but she's been worried about him. She cares about him. Jeff said it was getting uncomfortable to wear pants, and she went, thank God.
Yeah. she's gonna have to fight her way through Batwinch, I think, though.
Well, that would be worth paying for. We'll put it on the subscriber channel.
You know what? I want someone to film this because... I want to be able to show children when I'm old.
Mate.
This is what happened.
What, being sponged off? I want to give Jeff a bed.
This is what
bath
a proper international incident looks like.
Yeah, especially when Angela sees. Christ.
She'll help, right?
Oh, that's VIP.
We better bring a bigger camera.
If you'd like exclusive tickets to meet Jeff and sponge him off, then send a British an email to ticketnetwork@gmail.com. We'll be taking tickets.
So this is a new fundraiser.
Yeah, it's £50 per stroke.
Is it getting hot in here?
And all proceeds are going to Angela. There we go. While we're on the subject... we have got the bash coming up, 7th of July. If you'd like to come to the bash, then next week, if Righty sorts out the website, we'll get the tickets on sale and you can buy your bash ticket. It's definitely the weekend of the 7th. So we're going to meet up at 6th. If you'd like to come and use the white room here, then in the morning, get yourself down and I'll do a little photo studio thing with flash heads and that kind of stuff and show you a thing or two if you're interested. And then... we'll do the Mac show in the afternoon at 3 o'clock and then we'll do, or 4 o'clock, and then we'll do curry afterwards and then bash on Saturday and then barbecue at my place on Sunday, all the usual shears. But it's definitely 6th, 7th, 8th of July. So
can't wait.
It out. Some people have already got hotel rooms booked and that kind of stuff. And I think the algorithm has picked up that the hotel rooms have got a little bit more expensive. They're not massively expensive still, but they are more expensive than they were. So keep your diaries free. And if you have never been before, you will enjoy it. It's great fun, and it's loads of stuff to do. And just meet everyone that you hear about the podcast.
The best weekend you'll ever have.
Referring to in the chat. That's what we're doing. Shame you didn't get your holiday time booked at the right time, Jeff, so you could come to the bash.
You know, yeah. The reason the timing has to happen when it does is because Angela told you she wanted to run a half marathon that's in Newcastle.
You've come to London so that Angela can run a half marathon in Newcastle.
Which one are you doing, Jeff? The Great North Run?
I think that's it.
I'm running that. Yeah.
Is she experienced at running half marathons?
Yes, she is.
Okay, because the Great North Run is not friendly. It's not a friendly half marathon.
Oh, no, this is a very friendly half marathon.
It's undulating.
It's undulating, there's the word.
And the thing you need to know about that, Jeff, is that it starts in Newcastle and runs out of Newcastle and doesn't come back to Newcastle.
Oh, this one comes back to Newcastle. So it
has right. Fair enough. Maybe a different one then.
Yeah, here we go. Greeny's off and puffing. Boop, boop. over the engine.
Where's me spinach? There we go.
Greeny's off and running. The Week in Tech. What's going on? What's been all the big shiz? Who's going to start us off? Camps, have you already dived in?
I hit it. Has it come through? Has it landed in Birmingham yet?
It's here. So I think there's no prizes for guessing that the big story of the week is Cambridge Analytica exploiting, in inverted commas, Facebook. Talk us through it, Camps.
Yeah. Right. There's loads of information to do with this one. So chaps, jump in if you think I'm twisting anything the wrong way around. So I'll do a bit of background. So Cambridge Analytica, it's a political data analytics firm. They specialize in mining loads of consumer data from social media and other places. And they use that to create behavioral trends that are used for various companies, political organizations, used for targeted marketing, all that sort of stuff. So Cambridge Analytica have harvested 50 million people's Facebook accounts. So they've taken the data without authorization back in 2014. There is, I think it's evidence now. I think there's evidence to say that's played quite an influential role in the 2016 US election. It's all come out this week as a result of a Canadian whistleblower, Chris Wiley, who helped find Analytica. And basically, he's described how their algorithm has been used, obviously, to mine this data. Now, that's gone a little bit further because it's sort of how did they get a lot of this data? And has anybody seen in the news this week, the story is all based around an app that's on Facebook, or was on Facebook, called This Is Your Digital Life. This is an app where around, I think it's about 270,000 Facebook users clicked to take a personality quiz. As part of that personality quiz, it asks you to log in with your Facebook credentials. People have done that. Whilst people have been then using the personality quiz, it's mined their information, all of their feeds for what they've liked, pages they've visited, and it's gone on to also look at the pages that their friends have liked, the friends have visited, and it's got collected all this data together.
But none of this has been done illegally, has it?
Adam?
None of this has been done illegally.
To my knowledge, it
was done in violation.
And the reason that Facebook are taking the hit for this now is that I think probably the easiest way for me to summarize it is that the theory is that Facebook has been almost neglectful in the way that they have allowed, with the policy that they had in place when this happened, that they've allowed third-party companies to take this data based on the way that their algorithms worked and they've collected and harvested this data. And then they've used it. I think where it trips on Facebook's policies is that they've then used this with third parties to be able to use it for various means. And I think that's where it contravenes Facebook's policy.
Jeff, you had a point there.
Oh, yeah. Facebook's terms of service said that what they were doing was not permissible, even though their system totally allowed you to be able to do this. Facebook says that that like a year after all of this happened, they had changed their system so it wouldn't be possible. But I'm just really having a hard time feeling like Facebook has been making a serious effort to protect anyone's privacy.
No one's credentials have been exposed. No one's passwords have been lost. No one's lost any money over it. And it's not, it's anonymized data, isn't it? It's not identifiable data.
If you go,
what I understand, they were getting user profiles. So they had names, email addresses. Non-anonymous data, but they did not have passwords.
They have weaponized it, haven't they? I think that's
You look at my country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing that's scary to me is obviously it's 50 million. Was it 50 million accounts compromised on this one? That's about 3% of the entire Facebook usership. So you think how big this thing could be? You know, it's quite terrifying that a small subset of people it causes this much outrage. When you took a look at the 1.4 billion active users on Facebook, then this sort of thing. It's these sort of news articles, when they get into the main thing and people who aren't into tech ask you questions about it, you know that it's quite a serious thing, because these are normally things that us guys talk about between ourselves. You know, it's a big thing when your mums and dads and people at work ask you and those sort of things. And
yeah,
people are kind of like, ooh, I don't know what the sort of stuff that Facebook is collecting on me. But I did a thing the other day in light of this, is go into the Facebook app on my phone and look at what sort of apps, you know, what sort of data apps collect. And I was looking at like a couple of apps, and there was a couple of games, and it was collecting what my religious interests were, all this sort of thing. And I'm thinking, where is all that data going? And I did then went through and revoked all access to all the apps that I've ever let Facebook on. And you'd be surprised how many times you've actually allowed Facebook to access your profile. So obviously this is the only one we've found out about, but there's probably more and more things going to come out of the woodwork.
They grab your mobile number as well, don't they?
Yeah, probably easy there.
And your friend's mobile number, too. Sorry, I took myself off Facebook probably 6 months to a year ago.
I remember having a conversation with my mum a year, 18 months ago, because she seemed to be suddenly getting loads and loads of spam email. They were getting increasing sales calls and stuff like that, and that was to her mobile. And she said, I don't understand why it's happening. And the only thing that I could think of at the time is my mum was, back then, she would literally click any and every single link on Facebook. She'd play every game going. She'd all of the little memes that were on there, she'd be clicking them. It's like, Mum, why? What are you doing that for? You do realise how it works.
Yeah.
And yeah.
My mum does exactly the same thing. My mum's on Facebook, and it's like, what flower am I? What time of the year am I? What would my, I think I got one the other day, what would be my message after death would be, and all this sort of thing. And they just click on anything because because they didn't grow up with that technology. I think clicking on this stuff is safe. They just don't realize the kind of wealth of data that they're letting out to everyone.
Well, it is safe. Let's not go too alarmist.
Well, no.
There's nothing wrong with companies offering you a service in exchange for data. It's the way the world currently works. And, you know, you look at the Uber model, that's all they want is the data of where you've traveled from and to. So it's not nefarious. There's an open disclosure at the start that says, if you use our service, we will take certain things from you.
Oh, no, but we know that, but we know more about what these companies do, and we may
know. Everyone knows that. They may not know it in their head. It may not be active knowledge, but they have been foretold that this will happen.
Isn't the, I don't know so much from Facebook, maybe it is, but the third-party apps hosted by Facebook, they can change their terms and conditions without you. You probably just click yes or something like that. And that's been the problem, I think, as I understand it to be.
Well, you sign up to a set of terms and conditions which actually specifies that they can change those terms and conditions without notice.
Yeah, I know. But they've been very naughty with those terms and conditions, so that they make it all sort of nice at the start, and they say, okay, you say yes to these terms and conditions, but then they cunningly change them and take more information than you'd like to give out. The one thing I haven't seen highlighted in this is WhatsApp. WhatsApp being a Facebook company, how much of our WhatsApp stuff is being shared with Facebook? I know it's end-to-end encryption. How much? I don't know. You just can't trust them these days, can you?
Okay, the trust is not
end-to-end encryption. There's not much they can get.
No.
Right.
They've got to be actively selling later on.
I suppose Instagram. I think Instagram plays more into that example, really, than WhatsApp does.
Well, I've never really used Instagram. I think I've got an account. I don't have something to do with photos, but I've never really used it.
I love Instagram, but again, everything I post on there, absolutely, I accept that, you know, it's online. I suppose the way that Instagram's different is you're pushing out, you're pushing out images, so you're pushing out your content. It's less appealing. You see less of the targeted ads and the click here to, you know, find out what your spaceman name is and stuff like that. You don't tend to see that sort of stuff on Instagram, whereas it's fairly rampant on Facebook.
And even if you've deleted your account, which I have for, you know, a long time, before then, people still sort of posted pictures when I was a member, and Facebook's AI can recognize your face and still attach your name to your face, even without your permission.
No, it doesn't do that.
It does.
No, I've got pictures of me up that people haven't attached my name to, and Facebook hasn't done it automatically. That's not true. And if you get tagged by a third party, you get a notification that you've been tagged.
You won't get a notification if you're not a member.
Or block it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not true, Greeny.
I think it is. I'm gonna take issue with you on this point.
It's not true. You can't be tagged if you're not a member of Facebook.
Yes, you can. If you were a member of Facebook and it knows your face and it knows your name. It
doesn't tag you automatically.
It does.
I don't think it does either. Just from the point of view that I have an active Facebook account. My wife will put a picture on Facebook potentially with me on it, and I don't automatically get tagged.
No. And if you do get tagged, you get a notification and you have a right to remove the tag.
Yeah.
That's not true, Greeny.
Old Leo, I think, said it. That's the way it works. So I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, when did he say that? I mean, when was the last time you listened to Leo Laporte? 2005?
Possibly, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. There's a point.
No, it was this morning, actually.
Apparently, according to Mr. Batwinch, the We Can Change the T&Cs When We Fancy will end at the end of May. So it won't be happening. And I was thinking about the GDPR stuff. With GDPR coming, this would be a massive fine, surely.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's happened in this? You know, at the moment, they're going to get away with it, but this would be a humongous company-ending level fine, I would say.
Yeah.
But they have ramped up for you being able to delete your account now, haven't they? Because before it was kind of like, you know, I want to delete my account, wait 6 months, and they might do it.
Yeah.
Now I think you can do it within a matter of days now, can't you? That's all GDPR stuff as well.
Well, I'm gobsmacked at the amount of people who are glossing over GDPR and not realizing the impact that it can have upon them. And the thing is as well, I've had a few conversations, one with Rob Lyons, who's in our chat room, Jimmy Redneck, and I've said, look, I don't think it's an onerous piece of legislation, don't get me wrong, but if you have data at an extremely low level and you have fundamental principles of how you deal with it documented, I don't think it's meant to touch you. It's for people who have got vast quantities of data, who are retaining it, who are extorting that data for other purposes and leveraging things like elections and markets and that kind of stuff. It's not for us who've got a list of people who are coming to the bash next year. Although that does apply to that, as long as we've got a thing that says we're not keeping it for any other purpose than knowing that you're coming to the bash, that's all GDPR is trying to do.
But yeah. It wasn't it wasn't Leo, actually.
Well, it's either way, it's not true. So.
It was an article I read. Oh, I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah, Deepan says, I've spoken to all my clients about GDPR and they're all glossing over it. And that's my point. The people are glossing over it, not realizing that it can really bite them on the arse, but they're also not realizing that actually you can probably deal with the requirements for it fairly simply if you've got very low level data retention.
Is it worth defining what GDPR is at this point? So at least I know.
So it's General Data Protection Regulations, isn't it?
Oh, right.
And it's Data Protection Act. Sorry?
It's Data Protection Act on speed.
On speed, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Say again, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I work in... GDPR
is EU specific, right?
Yes.
Okay, so so when all this Brexit stuff wraps up, will it still apply to the UK?
Probably, because we will probably adopt an awful lot of legislation. And the other problem that you've got is if the data travels through EU-based servers, it's still...
if it's companies that are dealing in Europe as well as Britain.
So I can't see us not adopting it into homeland legislation.
When you see scenarios like this, it makes perfect sense for us to absolutely adopt this one, no question.
It depends backing that up.
Everyone that I talk to who does understand it is telling me it's the big antichrist. And I'm going, yes, I know it is if you ignore it. And I know it is if you're a big data carrier. But if you are simple like British Tech Network, it's not expecting you to go to huge lengths to show that your data is protected, retained, and all that kind of stuff. As long as you've got simple processes that can be outlined that show this is how we deal with it. And if someone rang up and said they could get rid of them, we'd get rid of them. You don't have to do a great deal more than that because we don't have the funds to have a massive process of control.
I work in a highly regulated industry, and every member of staff within the organization I work for is going through mandatory training around GDPR to make sure we all absolutely understand it and our accountability to it.
Yeah.
The same at the uni here. We were building a system to collect data. And we had to make sure that the servers where all the data was kept inside Europe, so it would be GDPR, secure at the point that it came in, all those sort of things. There's so many, things you've got jump through now. You know, the thing is to go by the GDPR, legislation now, and don't be ready when it comes in. Be ready now, because if you wait until it comes in, you're never going to catch up.
No. Batwench in the chat room says, is this following the principle of a LARP? Well, that's as low as is reasonably practical and relates to chemical exposure, probably more than GDPR. But as there are elements of GDPR which are cost and effort-based standards. So if you maintain lots of data and the risk of losing that data is high risk to the end users, then your requirements for compliance are significantly higher than those people who don't retain very much data or retain nonsensical data that wouldn't be damaging if it was lost. And so it's not a reasonably practical standard, but there's a lot of factors to that.
And doesn't it give ownership back to the user more about their data as well, doesn't it?
The big thing is the right to be forgotten. As DeepFans just put in the thing area, the right to be forgotten, and you can't keep that data on me because I don't want you to keep that data on me, therefore it has to go. And there's exceptions to that as well. So obviously law enforcement aren't in the same way for that, because they've got to keep previous offences and that kind of stuff. So there's exemptions for it. You look at the level that you're at, and there will be a proportion of compliance. If you're a seriously organisation like Campsys, you'll be putting money into it, and you'll be putting a lot of effort into it, and that will be proportional to the type of business that you are. If you're not, and you're like us, the amount of effort that the British Tech Network will be putting into it will be fairly low level, because we don't retain people's data and we don't have a lot of time for it. If someone sends us an email, unless it gets deleted, it just stays there. And yes, there's information in that, but and if someone said, have you got any emails from me, I'd write back and go, yes, I have, here's the emails I've got from you, do you want me to delete them? If I go yes, I'll delete them. But there's exemptions for financial information. So if I said, well, I'm sorry, but that lists a payment that you made to us. It's in-house. It's not going out to anyone else. I'm the only person that sees it. I'm asking for a right to retain that. Then they can't do it because I've got to keep financial records for 6 years. So,
exactly. Yeah.
And you've got to dispose of it when you're done. There we go. There next. Although Ewan is right, for people like us, the controls are not very onerous. Basically, only keep data for the purpose that you want to ensure you make clients aware that they need to give you permission for it. There you go. Two levels of fine based on GDPR. The first is up to £10 million or 2% of the company's global turnover, which is not £10 million where we're concerned. That's about 45 pence. and the financial previous year's finances, which is higher. The second is up to 20 million or 4% of the company's, so 90 pence, of the company's global turnover for the previous financial year, whichever is higher. The potential fines are substantial and a good reason for companies to ensure compliance with the regulation. There's deeper. There you go. There is a proportion of compliance. There can't be absolute compliance, which everyone's been telling me. I'm like, no, there can't be absolute compliance. The absolute is the bit that, you know, I've got a right to be forgotten for certain types of information. Yes, you have. That's absolute. But it's not the system that you have in place. It's got to be proportional to the types of data. Good story, mate. How did they actually influence the election and did they influence the outcome at all?
I think Jeff, you'll be able to answer this way better than I can.
Yeah, go for it. Let's just...
Okay. So the data that was collected through this app was then used to help strategize the whole political campaign for initially was used like as a test case on like I think it was a senatorial race, but then ultimately for the presidential race. And so what they were able to do was take this data and figure out how to target people specifically with right. the types of messages that they wanted to get out, to be able to manipulate how people were thinking about the election. And apparently they had a system that was really effective because they were able to figure out how to target people in just the right way to really drive up that support that Trump needed at the expense of Clinton.
The Bob Beach has put in market targeting as well to kind of back you up there. Has that mean that the Russians didn't from power? There was an interesting thing. I don't want to spoil anyone. Has anyone watched the last series of Homeland?
No.
There's a bit in there about social media manipulation and these huge banks of people who are just creating fake accounts and trying to influence people with their messages. Deepan actually put a tweet out on Twitter the other day about some kid who's supporting Corbyn over this Russian photoshopped hat thing on BBC. And the kid started off with a picture of himself next to a Sky interviewer, and he's come in like he's answering a question. It very quickly zooms to him, and he goes on and on and on. And Deepan retweeted, and I was like, that's bullshit. No one talks for that long on Sky News uninterrupted. And he replied, good point. You've got to be, yeah, but it was very well done. And it was bullshit. It was just his agenda. Like, he was answering someone's TV question, and it was bollocks, absolute bollocks. The age of manipulation is here and steadfast. Who's got the next story? All righty, boys, fast-fingered boy. Talk us through it, righty. Twitter CEO, Bitcoin will be the world's single currency in 10 years. God, I friggin' hope not.
Well, this is what I was going to hope you were going to say. So, good old Jack Dorsey, the old steadfast CEO of Twitter, which is obviously a great organisation. He reckons that cryptocurrency will become the world's single currency, both in our lives and online, within 10 years. Okay, this bloke is also CEO of Square, who now do Bitcoin.
Bit of a vested interest then, yes.
I didn't also realize that Square just released a children's illustrated book that tells them about the advantages of cryptocurrency.
Janet,
serious?
Janet and John go Bitcoin mining.
Bit mining.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like,
yeah. That's got all sorts of connotations, hasn't it?
It's not good. But then I was looking into it, and I think the Facebook thing kind of eclipsed everything this week. So this is what Jack Dorsey said, but there's been loads of stuff going on in the back end of the Bitcoin blockchain this week. Lots of things like HMRC over here, and you know the tax people over in America are looking at can you do corporate gains tax and things like that on Bitcoin, because obviously it's like sitting on an asset while it increases in value. They haven't got a mechanism in place at the moment, but they're going to do that. So would that put people off? But the thing that really got me, and I wasn't going to add it to the story, but it's quite interesting, is researchers in Germany this week have been analyzing the actual Bitcoin blockchain. Now, obviously, for those, probably a lot of people know the Bitcoin blockchain is something that people download to their machine. And go to their PCs, it tells them all the history of different transactions, so you can prove that you're the person who did the transaction, and it's an audit. But inside the blockchain, there's 6,000 hidden files, and they've got access to these files. Now, some of them are links to the dark web, some things are links to innocuous things, but 8 of these images are porn images. And 3 of those 8 images, and as the article says, 3 are objectionable for almost all jurisdictions. So there's like child stuff in there, and that's like really dodgy. Now, the problem with that is if you've downloaded the Bitcoin blockchain, you've got those images on your computer, and you're now violating the law. So basically, the police can come around your house now, and you're hosting dodgy content on your computer. And like I say, it's been a clip because of the Facebook thing. But it's almost like as soon as Jack Dorsey said Bitcoin's going to be the big thing, it's almost like it's unraveling right now. And I don't know if it's hackers who've put that information in, or, you know, white hat people trying to undermine the currency and that sort of thing. But I just wondered what you thought about Bitcoin as a currency and this sort of security risk that you kind of run by actually taking up the currency.
You want a discussion? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, although we've not had a big talk about with Bitcoin or not, but I've always been interested now, and this sort of information kind of really puts me off because you don't know what you're dealing with, really, do you?
So Bob Beach has made his feelings known. He is an economist, and he's put this is utter bollocks. There you go. Thanks, Bob. The Bitcoin stuff is, you've got as much likelihood as the yen or the pound or the dollar becoming a global currency for everyone, as in the global currency and everything else fading away, as you have with Bitcoin. Because the problem is governments want control of finance. Governments want control of banks. Government wants control of their gold asset in paper form. So they're never going to allow Bitcoin to be the prevailing currency, because it'll be a prevailing currency of people who want to use it, but the distrust is so massive.
You know, keep in mind the person that's saying Bitcoin is going to be the currency in 10 years is the same guy who can't figure out how to put a fracking edit button on a tweet.
Not exactly, yeah.
Well, that's that story done.
He's got it though.
Well, he hasn't got an edit button, has he?
No, Jeff's got it.
But you tease, rightly.
You what?
You tease.
Yeah, but I don't know enough about it. But you hear things. You know, you hear things. People who make big and all this sort of stuff. And I'm sure. You know what? In the early days, I'd love to have got on this, but obviously, Bitcoin mining is at an industrial scale now. You know, people are building mining farms next to hydroelectric plants and all that sort of stuff. So, going away from the kind of risks and all that sort of thing and dodgy things being hidden in the blockchain, there's no real way for normal people to even get onto the platform, is there? You can't even buy a consumer GPU at the moment. You know, the prices are through the roof because all the Bitcoin miners are buying them at the moment. So it can never become a common currency.
It's a bit, don't you think they ought to, because at the moment, one Bitcoin is about 10 grand, isn't it? So it's like, you know, don't you think you need to devalue the currency a little bit so that you can have lower denominations if it's going to be
useful? Well, yeah, you think so, wouldn't you?
How do you get change from one Bitcoin?
Satoshis, which are fractions of Bitcoins.
I've never even heard of those before today.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
I've learned more than I could ever imagine about Bitcoin from Brian Chaffin, because he's like so deep into this. So yeah, so you have these fractions of Bitcoins called Satoshis, and that's what people will actually be using when they're paying for stuff, because yeah, with the Bitcoin being worth thousands of dollars, I mean, that's not what you're going to pay for a cup of coffee. So you need Satoshis, which are the fractions. And then, you know, maybe your cup of coffee costs like five Satoshis or something.
Yeah. Single currency systems are very difficult to operate efficiently. Look at the Eurozone. Good point, Bob Beach. Thank you. Should have had you on the show, really, shouldn't we?
I could have a night off.
Batman says, how can I remember stuff like Bitcoin being used on a show, but I can't remember where I've put my glasses, because Bitcoin's dressed up to be sexy and happening. And now, and I see this a lot in industry. It's just like, I think I've said this before, you know, they measure the alignment of the sleepers by tying a piece of string round one and then tying it round one that's five sleepers away. And then they shove the sleepers till they all line up on the clasps. And then they go from that one that's already been set and they lay the piece of rope out again. And they line all the others up, and it's as quick as you like. But if someone comes along and says, oh, we've got this track vehicle that rolls along, it's £6 million, but it rolls along the top of the sleepers and it precisely aligns them relative to the curve of the tunnel wall, someone's going to go, wow, got to have that. And it's like, hang on, two blokes do it with a piece of string far easier and quicker. Mm. It's just like an obsession with technology as a solution to the problem. And it's not.
So you're not in on it then?
No, I get this at the moment because it's like a lot of people, I show them the Wirecam stuff that I've got. So I've got a camera that runs along a wire, and you don't need CAA licensing. You don't have any restrictions on what you can film. If you can put the line up, you can film it. Simple as that. You can throw it between two buildings in the city center. No one can stop you as long as the two buildings are giving you permission. And I talk to people and show them this system, and they're kind of like, oh, no, drones is where it's at. And then they actually go and try and get permission to fly in the middle of London or fly in the middle of Birmingham. And they're like, about that system that you've got. Yeah, righto, mate. So you just go, oh, drones are the big thing. But it's just because it's the smart technology of the moment, and people think it's the best thing since sliced bread, and it's not. It has limitations the same as everything does.
I told a dude at work your thing the other day. He thought it was amazing.
You did what?
I told a dude at work.
My camera?
Yeah.
Cool.
Your film. Yeah, he loved it.
Thanks, man. Tell him I'll come and film Avengers HQ there.
Yeah, well, I didn't talk to you anyway, but you know, later.
All right. I'll have a word. Have we done that story? Because
I think I got blown out of the water, basically.
Bitcoin seems to be the...
We haven't ever like, kind of done a round robin if we were in or not, and that was my interest. You know, if you'd have been in at the start when it was easy to drop 50 Bitcoins out, buy a pizza with 20,000 of them, would you have been in on it, you know? Or you regretted it, you know, not getting it early now that everyone's, you
know, I just see it so as expensive. It's an utterly unregulated currency by any single government, and there's no exchange rate value on it that can be controlled by traditional mechanisms. So I see it as worthless on that basis at all, because it's just like, oh, how much is it worth this week? Where's the net asset to predict the value of it? There's no reserves backing it up, you know. It's just, I don't see how it works in that sense. So, but I'm just off.
I wouldn't mind a couple of them though.
Well, I don't know. The people would automatically assume you're a Russian hacker who's just frigged someone's NAS drive. So, because that's the preferred currency of the hacker, is it not? So,
for me, the most interesting.
Oh, no, fellas, stop! Bob Beach has just typed completely correct analysis, Ewan. There's a first.
Nicely done.
I'm spitballing and trying to think of how to end the sentence, and I'm right. Jesus, that's never happened. Sorry, Greedy, you're about to say something wrong.
All I was going to say is, I find the whole Bitcoin thing a bit bored with it, and a bit bored of the whole Facebook thing too. But I do, the one thing about Bitcoin I find absolutely fascinating is the man who made it, this mystery man who nobody seems to know his name. He don't know whether he's still alive, how many Bitcoins he's got. I find that part of it very intriguing. It's like an Agatha Christie, isn't it?
He lived three doors down from me.
Huh?
Right? He lived three doors down from me.
Really?
Oh, does he?
With his sister.
Oh, say hi for him.
Norfolk.
It is, but yeah, no, he's a recluse. Well, nobody knows who he is. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, take his bins in.
It's Banksy. we're not going to do this on the show, but afterwards we need to have someone explain to me how you mine for a Bitcoin with a computer, because that's just like, I don't get that. What? How can I do work to get a Bitcoin? And I guess it was processing. But I never understood that bit anyway.
I can explain it to you.
Oh, go on then. If it's short-ish.
Sure. Yes, I'll make it short. Okay, so the way you mine Bitcoin is you're part of the system that is validating transactions. So transactions have to go through this whole process where like multiple computers verify that the sender and the receiver are legit, and then once that's done, then the transaction is completed, and the computers that were involved in the process of making that happen, they earn a fraction of a Bitcoin, and then after you've done enough computations, then it's possible that you could uncover a new Bitcoin, and then it goes into the system, and then there's one more Bitcoin that's available. So individual people, this is not ever going to happen for them. That's why you have the big Bitcoin farm, mining farms, and then you have these kind of co-ops where a bunch of people will go in, and so then if they actually mine a Bitcoin through their validation processes, then that Bitcoin gets shared throughout the co-op.
There was a guy in England who had 4,000 Bitcoins that he'd mined on his own PC back at the very start of the currency, and he threw the computer out because it was old, and the drive was in a landfill, and he and it was worth, at the time, it was worth about £4 million. And it got, now it would be worth probably £1 billion based on the change in the currency.
And yeah, he walks through the
landfill, stopping every computer.
Yeah, those Bitcoins are just out of the system now.
But they're still about
it. It's not like they roll over and get recovered or anything. They're just gone.
Why?
A large percentage of the coins are just missing, or you know, people forgetting their passwords and all that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
that only adds to the feeling it's complete bollocks. Well done, Bob. I'm with you, mate. That's made my night now, actually. Thanks for joining us at the big show. That was great. Thanks for listening. Let's finish it right there. Right, there's only two of you left. Fight it out. Who's having the story? Jeffrey's in.
Okay, my story's weird.
And it's not a sex toy. Brilliant. Love that.
It's just weird. There's this company that has designed a system so that they can download your brain into a computer system. So it's stored, and then you could eventually be downloaded into another computer system or into a new body. The thing is, though, if you decide that you want to have your brain downloaded into their computer system, you have to die. So they have to kill you to be able to download your brain. And the technology isn't even here so that we can verify that what they're doing is actually working. And get this, there's a waiting list of people that are ready to be killed and have their brain downloaded into this company's computer system.
So this is Vanilla Sky then?
Totally Vanilla Sky. And there are people that are lining up saying, yeah, kill me and download my brain. Without having any idea if this actually works at all. So no one can do this yet because the company isn't actually providing the service, but they've announced it, and people are dropping these deposits to be on the list. It costs like $10,000 just to get on the waiting list.
I take back everything I just said about Bitcoin because it sounds completely real in comparison to this shit.
Yeah. I mean, this is like batshit crazy stuff. And I'm just baffled that people are willing to throw $10,000 a pop at this company for the opportunity to be killed and have their brain downloaded into some storage system.
Swamp rat in the
chat room. They're mine, aren't they?
Swamp rat in the chat room suggested that his brain would fit on a standard floppy. I don't know if that's a 512 or a 144, but...
At least a zip disk.
Oh, you reckon you can manage a zip, 100 meg?
Yeah.
Don't put it on a jazz because then you're going to be lost.
This is the thing. You get it put on an iMega drive and then they can't find the power supply. So you're all on there, but we just can't get you off again. The people have got to work you up to what consciousness is, and it's actually enjoying what's in front of you, not... there was a book that I read years ago. It was by a guy called Someone Jordan, and he had his this guy was dying, and he told his brother that he downloaded himself slowly into this computer and given it all this AI, if you like, with it, and then this box that had some flashing lights and a voice activation thing that sounded like his brother. He talked to his brother and he got his brother to go and do the physical things for him. And he went out and he made venture capital and that kind of stuff. And they made an absolute fortune. And then the last bit of the book was him laughing as the computer was dying effectively for a second time. And his brother was left with all the money. And I was thinking about the Daniel Suarez thing, you know, with DSpace and all that kind of stuff, with the guy that downloaded himself into the net. It'd be really cool if there was any possibility of doing it, but you can't control your electronic self. So your consciousness is lost. So you lose consciousness. So therefore you can't control the thing that you've created. And I'd be so worried that all the, because you look at the AI stuff that's gone on in Twitter with people responding to and turning the AI that Microsoft did into a sex-crazed Nazi. And you just think, what would happen to my consciousness or my knowledge? Would I become something like that at the influence of other people? And I don't want that. When I'm dead, I'm gone. Yeah.
Well, I doubt that this even works at all.
Well, no, there is that. Let's not. I'd kind of let past that bit, Jeff. But
I'd assume like a really, really crap Kickstarter with no chance of.
They're not going to deliver it on time either, like all the other Kickstarters.
Exactly.
Yeah, and part of the thing is they're saying, look, we can download your brain, but we think it's going to be about 100 years before we have the technology to put you into something else. And this is even with the fact right now that we have no idea if they're actually really downloading anything out of someone's brain into a computer storage system. Like, they have no idea if that's even a possibility.
It's, if you look at it, I've sort of recently done an article on this, and the big difference, I suppose, so you have artificial intelligence, which is one thing, which in a sense is what you're going to get, isn't it really? Because you also have, some people call it organic intelligence, some people call it human intelligence, which is very different to AI. But if you take the human intelligence part out of the equation and it just becomes a carbon copy of that person, it's just AI, isn't it? That's all it is. I mean, there are deeper questions that, you know, revolve around the soul and that sort of stuff. And if you're spiritual about that, you know, life after death and that sort of thing. But really, it's just a basic technology. So we've got it today, I suppose, in some ways. If you think about AI, if that's exactly the same there's no soul going on there. It's just artificial intelligence that you can talk to, and it can talk to you, I suppose, as if it was human, but it isn't. It's I'm not going to say worthless, because I don't know if any robots out there. But
if you read down on the story as well, this is quite interesting. There's a waiting list, it says, and it talks about Ray Kurzweil books and that kind of stuff. But it does say, either way, pay attention to the company Nectone, because the company has won a large federal grant and is collaborating with Edward Boyden, a top neuroscientist at MIT, and its technique just claimed an $80,000 science prize for preserving a pig's brain so well every single synapses inside could be seen under an electron microscope.
Oh,
so this is not, this is not, that they're on a path, it would seem. It doesn't work, and they admit it doesn't work, but they've actually managed to preserve tissue intact so that nothing has died off. And if your synapses die off, then that's when you get strokes and all that kind of rubbish, isn't it? So they're doing something. We might be a little bit premature scoffing here.
I just don't know if it's what they think.
Well, yeah, but it's like saying, look, I've got this, you know, I've got this block of wood, and I've whittled off as many of the sides I can stand. It's still bumpy, but I reckon I can get a few more off, and then it'll run smoother. And lo and behold, we ended up with the wheel. And they're on a path, and they've done something, and they've got this bloke involved, and there's recognition of the fact that they've done something that's never been done before with synapses of a pig brain. So,
you know, come out of this isn't eternal life for people. It's repairing damaged brains.
Yes, it might be an active thing for getting people well again. Yes, rather than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a quote in the article that just makes it feel so snake oil to me, though. And so it's, if the brain is dead, it's like your computer is off, but that doesn't mean the information isn't there.
Well, you've got to read that in the context of what they're talking about getting a fresh brain, because that's why they need to kill it, because they need to kill you so that the injected chemicals maintain the synapse.
Get the data.
Exactly. Well, the process is inject the chemicals in, and the chemicals will kill you, but by that point, they've done their job in preserving. So that's the interesting part.
But I don't think I fancy this.
You don't fancy it?
No, I don't think so. Kill me, take my brain out, suck all my information out, and preserve it forever, or for as long as this Earth exists. Or then, even if the Earth is going to blow up, send it to Mars or something. It's not a winner for me.
I don't think, on the fact it doesn't work, it's not a winner for anyone at the moment anyway, Greeny. So you're safe, mate, don't worry. You want to check the CEO, is it Baron Frankenstein, says Bob B. Bowers said, but do they have to cut the brain up to see if they're all there? Good question, but I think it was electron microscope, and it showed like a scanning thing, like an MRI thing on the page. So still sounds like cryogenics. No, it's not. Well, no. Cryogenics is temperature-based, isn't it? This isn't. This is preservatives. So,
and if we only use sort of 20% of our brain, will this new technique,
that's
when it works?
That's another lie.
Well, that's what they say.
No, it's a complete lie. It's an utter fabrication that was made up by that's rubbish. I listened to the Infinite Monkey Cage, mate. They've had loads of neuroscientists on there going, no, that's utter bollocks. Doesn't do that. You'll use 100% of your brain 100% of the time.
Oh, I thought there were
big
sort of spaces in there that didn't work, or, you know, were connected to the supernatural and being psychic and doing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, now I don't deny your ability to perhaps levitate yourself at some point, Greeny, but it's not a percentage of brain use thing.
I had a very good mate who could do that. He could levitate, but it was a trick, and he'd come around and show us, and it would look like he was levitating off the floor. It was incredible, and the children used to absolutely love it. Brilliant. Okay,
so, but it was an illusion.
Yes, it was an illusion. Okay. But it was a really, really good trick.
If it was a really, really good illusion, therefore we'll call it free. Greeny, there's only you left to choose a story. Come on, mate.
Whack it in the room.
Whack it in the chat room. I dread to think what this is doing up then.
No. It's quite boring, actually, compared to the brain one. the Apple event coming up in less than a week, which, being an Apple fanboy, I find very exciting. It's all based around education. I used to be a teacher, psychological teacher, and I used to teach, IT. Apple have, I think, fallen a little bit behind the curve when it comes to working with education. They're doing really well with things like interactive books and all that, but they've sort of fallen behind a bit. And so I think this is an effort for them to sort of regain some ground. So that's good. And so they spent all this money on this massive blowing Steve Jobs center, they're not holding it there. They're holding it in a school. So really, I suppose this piece is more rumor stuff. You know, what can we expect to see? There's big rumors about an Apple or a new version of the pen or stylus with different nibs. There's also so Chromebooks, Google's Chromebooks are giving Apple a real kick in the ass when it comes to putting technology into schools. So, you know, they're cheap and they're effective and they're very easy to manage. And they're not particularly easy to manage for teachers. They're quite expensive. And so we've got the iPad, and that's okay. But it doesn't do, I think, I talk from experience here. It doesn't do everything that is needed to fit a curriculum. So the rumors are, so we get the pen, but is there going to be a new MacBook Air? Because that's about 3 years old now, I think, since the last refresh. Or will be a different low-cost Apple-based solution for schools with the keyboard? So there it is. That's my one, anyway.
So the chat room is up in arms.
Oh, good.
An Apple story on the Big Show.
It's greedy.
Yes, I do. It's Bob Beats, as I too work in education. There's about 50% of our listeners are shuddering at the thought that Greeny actually taught kids in schools. I thought Apple stories were banned from this show. They're off on one, mate. It's the Wicker Man.
Why can't we talk about tech? This is called the British Tech Network, and this is a tech story.
Because we've got a Mac show, so we don't do Apple stories on this. But as you're not on the Mac show tomorrow, we'll allow an exception, Greeny. How's that?
Oh, okay. Well, I do think it's quite an interesting story, considering how many millions of billions of pounds they've got. Apple are heading quickly towards to becoming the first $1 trillion company in the history of man, which I think is fairly interesting. And they seem to be buying up companies. I find it fascinating, whether it's Apple or whether it's Microsoft. Mind you, they don't seem to do a fat lot these days, or Google, which is a really interesting. But I'm not going to go, because they're going to have a go at me about the Google thing, because that's my sort of, that's where I work. But the Apple part is, I thought it was interesting. Ewan, back me up on this. Do you think it's interesting?
I think they're just going to do a staged upgrade. I think they might bring a brand new pencil, and I think they're going to upgrade to wireless charging and that kind of stuff, and maybe a Face ID thing on the Pro, go in line with the 10, but the iPhone 10. But I'm not so sure that this is. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of people going, well.
All right, so let me know when you're ready for me to tell you how you're all wrong.
Go on then, Jeff. Why are we all wrong? I can edit.
Okay. So everyone is looking at this education media event and getting all excited about hardware. What they're doing is holding a media event in a high school. Okay. So a high school that focuses on technology in education. This is not about introducing new iPads and new Apple Pencils and new MacBook, whatevers. This I think, is about a new education initiative. This is about a new platform that Apple's going to roll out that is going to mimic what Google is doing with their
classroom.
Google in the classroom, their G Suite for education program. I think that's what Apple's doing here. So they're going to show off this new system where people don't have to go through the stupid hoops and paperwork that they have to deal with right now for student IDs, for being in school. And I think they're going to set up a system where you can, based on your domain as an education institution, assign Apple IDs to students, and they will be transient. So when the student leaves the school or graduates, then you can shut down that ID as the school IT administrator, and it'll work like G Suite for Education does, where a student leaves, they can export their data and put it into a different Apple ID if they want. I think this is all about creating a new framework for using Apple technology in schools. They may have some price discounts that go along on current products, but I would be absolutely stunned if Apple uses this event to introduce any new software, new hardware.
So Jeff, from this story in The Verge, then the class kit section, which is near the top of the section. That, yes. Am I right in thinking then that's probably what you think is the key theme? Class kit being a framework. Which will allow developers new options for creating educational apps, including the ability to distribute quizzes and tests through iPads to students, have answers reported directly back to the teacher. And obviously, you can then extrapolate that out, maybe some element of project activity, where through controlled Apple IDs, they can submit coursework and things like that, all directly back through ClassKit.
Yep. And we may see a new educational price point on the 9.7-inch iPad. And I think iPad is going to be a key element in Apple's whole new infrastructure for education. But this is really about the platform. This is not about announcing new hardware and giving us new Apple Pencils. I don't think there's any of that happening.
No. If we talk next week, and you're wrong. Imagine next week, after the announcement, and they've released, I think it's the 27th or something, they've released a new MacBook Air for schools. What are you going to do?
Well, I will laugh at how wrong I was.
Mate, brace yourself here, Jeff. Second time tonight, Bob Beach has said, I think Jeff is correct. So that's me who's got it right. Boom. And Jeff who's got it right, according to Bob. So there we go. Deep Pan has said, I hope in the education event they teach that stupid kid in the iPad Pro adverts what a computer is. What's a computer? What's a computer? Oh, if I was the woman on the other side of that fence, I'd throw the washing out and go, for day. Batwinch believes that we're paying Bob this evening. He's taking a non-grumpy old bastard pill, that's for sure. Normally he's giving me shit in the chat room about how wrong I am, so okay. Greeny, you are the only person to bring an Apple story to the big show and get away with it.
Good man.
Well, that's
one off the bucket list, mate. One off the bucket list.
That's good. And I don't why is Apple not on the big show?
We've got a Mac show. There's no point in doing the same stories, is there? Because everyone would bring an Apple story, and then what the hell are we going to talk about on Friday?
I suppose.
Same shit, different day. It doesn't work, mate.
I'd mix it up with robot sex toys. Don't worry.
Yeah, Jeffrey does save us with robot sex toys on a regular basis. And other tech that he's asked to review, if you know what I mean. But
yeah,
and you wouldn't want to send it back now. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. We love them to bits. They are absolutely stunning. They give us an absolute massive server that holds all of the shows we've ever done. You can go back to the very start. Martin, Magic Man in the Slack room said, what's the first ever show I can listen to in the Mac show? I said, The Mac Men Cometh, mate, and it is on the server. You can scroll all the way back through the Mac shows, and you can listen to the very first one with Dr. Happy Mac, Greeny Boy, Kyle Swagger, myself, and Don McAllister. It is right there. So yeah, thanks, UK2. Please support them because they support us, and give them all of your necessity or your needs for online stuff, domains, VPN, VPS, location services, the whole shebang. Thank you very much to them. We've done the Hoya, the Spider 5 competition, and the winners have been notified, and they should be in receipt of their Spider 5. So if you're not, give us a shout and I'll get in touch. But I have got in touch with the promotion agency and they have said that they were sending them out. So there's a couple of you are in the, or one of you's in the States, so you might have to wait that a little bit longer because it's gone. But the rest of you should be having it now anyway. Whatever happened to Dr. Happy Mac? He's happy. He's loved up, mate. That's why he doesn't do anything. Right. Time for the cool thing. Mr. Campion, start us off.
Okay. So I'm not necessarily a fan of screen protectors on my phone, but I did want one for my Garmin watch. So this isn't specifically about the Garmin watch. It's Kimila. These little glass screen protectors. They do them for all sorts of things, in all honesty. They do them for various different watches, Fitbits, they do them for GoPros, even for the Amazon Echo Sport. They do them for all sorts of different devices. And I think it was just short of £6, was it? Yeah, £6 for the Garmin one. The quality is great, really, really easy to apply. Because no air bubbles or anything at all like that. And for me, it was about when I'm running, what I don't want to do is just sort of catch it on a wall or a stile as I'm running down, something like that, and then scratch the screen on the watch. So just to give it to keep it looking good. So yeah, dirt cheap, really easy to apply. And this has been on now for about 3 months, no shift, no bubbles, no nothing. I've showered with it on, and it works great.
Excellent, man.
Keep my little screen protectors.
£5.98 on Amazon with Prime.
Yep. But like I say, it's not just for that particular watch. They're doing for so many different watches. Unbelievable.
Excellent, mate. Like that a lot. Well done. Okay. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, mate?
I have not a sex toy today. What I have is a new Lego kit that is being released this Saturday, and it's the Tron light cycles from the second Tron movie, and it regardless of whether or not you enjoyed the movie, the light cycles were actually really cool. So this Lego kit that's coming out, it's one of the blue cycles, one of the orange cycles, and three of the characters from the movie, and it just looks like stupid cool. It even has the little energy wall that shoots out the back of the bikes. They have those too. So this is $34.99 US, and I'm assuming it's cheaper for you guys since you're not in the United States. And Lego typically charges less outside the United States, but it's just a really cool kit. So guess what I'm buying this Saturday morning?
Oh, mate. Does it got a battery compartment? Is it illuminated? And
it is not illuminated, but...
Well, it's not a Tron cycle then, is it?
Translucent pieces. You could pretty easily light this if you wanted to.
I'm going to call there, mate, and say that if they haven't provided for either plastics that channel light through the ends to make them look like they're illuminated, or they've not put a battery compartment in with some LEDs that make it look like they're illuminated, they're going to be overcharging regardless of how much they charge.
And yet I'm buying the crap out of this.
Okay.
All right, so after I get it, I'll see if I can figure out how to easily light the kit. How's that sound?
Yeah, no, we can give us a demo next week. Batwinch has put your link that you put in was the brain thing earlier on, Jeff. That's why I was getting a bit confused. But there we go. Batwinch has put them in. Tron Cycles. There we go.
Oh, yep. See, cheaper for you than for me.
And truly scary if you're a Lego man, because of the way that your neck is built, you can only look at the front wheel. So there, it really is head down, no idea where I'm going from. They look quite small as well.
Yeah, I can see where if you were a literal minifigure, driving one of these would be really dangerous because your neck doesn't have XYZ rotation.
No. So $29.99 for two small Tron cycles. I think that's a bit pricey, mate.
Well, hold on. How many pieces are in this kit? 230 pieces plus three minifigures.
It's fiddly overpriced.
Yeah. Okay. So with minifigures in the United States, this kit should probably cost $29.
Each bike's about 3.5 inches long by about 3/4 inch wide.
Well, you do the price based on number of bricks. So you go with a dime a brick, but then you have to bump it up a little bit because minifigures cost more than regular bricks. So $23, no minifigures, $29 with minifigures. Yeah, so they're overcharging for this, which probably has to do with Disney's licensing fees.
What do you do with it, though? I mean, that's the thing with kits, is once you've built the kit, that's about it, isn't it?
You're racing on the floor making motorbike noises. Jesus Christ, Greeny.
Yeah, well, no, it's you buy this stuff, every Christmas Day, you buy this stuff, and you end up putting it together, and then when you've done it all, that's it. And then the next day it's broken up somehow. And then the bits aren't used again because for something as specialized as this, what else can you do? Go on, Jeff, you tell me.
So you can make any damn thing you want. It's Lego. I mean,
that's the cool thing. You can make a Tron bike, and that's about it.
It's like this pipe.
You've never played with Lego.
Make him a Lego pipe.
I have played with Lego. Still got Lego.
Okay, so whatever you want to make, you can. That's it. It's Lego.
And he doesn't. Have you noticed? Jeff needs kudos here because he doesn't put an S on the end. He's an American who doesn't use an S on the end of Lego. So he gets.
I understand what a company name is.
Yeah.
And what a product is. Lego makes bricks.
Lego bricks.
Really cool bricks.
Not Legos. The one thing I will say, and I couldn't agree with you more on this, is that Lego's a bit too much about building a specific thing now rather than just having a bunch of bricks and creating.
That's true.
Yeah, they have a lot of very specialized kits. I'm glad that they still have the more generalized kits.
Yeah, but even so, you build the thing that's on the box and then it's done. Whereas my kids have got bucket loads of my old Lego and stuff that we had for them when they were small. And it's only been in the last sort of 5 years where it's like you buy the technical kit or you buy the specific thing, you make it up and you play with that thing, but there's no creativity in the architecture, if you like, of building a house out of not having enough bricks or trying to get a V-shaped roof on it when it's only got square bricks.
So what I like about the specialized kits is that they oftentimes use really unique building techniques. So I found that I actually learn a lot about how I can create my own models better when I build one of these customized kits.
You're all wondering what the noises are. It's Greeny trying to light his pipe.
But it's not. It is. You're sort of adding those post. So, yeah. He's got the sound effect of a match being lit. Some old idiot smoking a pipe.
Lego are the biggest tyre manufacturer in the world, says Magic Man.
Oh, yes, I knew that.
Well, they're not real tyres, though, so they can't be.
Yeah, but it's based on number of tyres, not tiny amount of rubber.
Yeah, no, that's
No, Lego is considered the world's largest tire manufacturer.
That's like how to win an American election statistics. I'm not having that.
What's the point of buying the little men with it, though? Because they're not going to ride the bikes through the night or anything, are they, really? I mean, what do you do?
What's to do?
You put your mom in it. And,
haven't you watched Toy Story?
So what's going to happen during the night?
I bet you're a barrel after you've got your kids, aren't you?
I'm not building Lego with Greeny.
He's sitting there. His kids are going to come around this weekend, and his daughter's going to go, "I'm a princess," and he's going, "No, you're not. No, you're not. No, 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 no." Don't say that kind of stuff because you're not.
I would never say that.
I'm Batman, says Marwood, and Greeny goes, "No, no, no, no. Don't be silly. That's British Wayne," and he's not real.
No, all he's interested in is.
And while we're on it, I keep your teeth. Yes, I put the £2 under your pillow.
Call me back now, please.
Sorry, mate. Greeny, have you got a cool thing for us other than
I've got a pipe.
Your shag twist that you're puffing on.
A bit of rough shag. I know this is, it is sort of tech, but it isn't. But this has kept me entertained for a few days now. And this is, absolutely no promotion, because Audible have been a big sponsor of many, many, many podcasts. But I'm a member and I enjoy it. And if you join for free, you can get one book for nothing. And if you keep changing your email address, you can keep it. You can keep on keeping on. So I've been told. that's a cunning insider tip. And with my brand new email address, I have got the name of the rose, and bugger me, is it good? It is absolutely amazing. I did read it as in sort of Dead Tree version years and years ago, but I've totally forgotten about it, the plot. And the narrator, a gentleman called Sean Babbitt, his name is. It's 21 hours and 9 minutes. If you're going to buy it straight from Audible, it would cost you £50 plus. But I think really...
You know those are bullshit prices, right?
You probably, but I don't really care because, as I say, in my instance, I got it for free. And Sean Barrett is an amazing narrator. But obviously, the amazing story that Umberto Eco tells is, if you're doing something, you're on a train journey, and you wish that the train journey would keep on going until, so you could continue listening to the book. It's one of those. It's that good. I think, in all honesty, it's the best audiobook I've ever listened to. So there we go. The Name of the Rose.
So that was the film with the bloke that was a submarine commander out of...
as always, books are so much better than films. It's quite a lengthy one, but it's absolutely fantastic. And keep changing your email address.
A good film with Christian Slater, as the chat room is pointing out.
Wasn't his character called?
What was his character called?
Yeah, I'm totally sure it's William.
He was just a monk, wasn't he? He was the apprentice monk. I'm not sure.
Maybe they don't mention it in the film. But there it is.
Thanks, mate. Brilliant. Name of the Rose on stolen from Amazon.
It's not stolen. Doesn't say anything about you keep changing your email address and keep doing the one free book thing.
Righty boy, what have you got for me?
I'll stuck it in the chat room. You big city cats have probably got all this trendy stuff, but we've just got it in Norwich. So it was date night for me and my lovely wife on Saturday, and we went to a place called The Wallow in Norwich. And I don't like going to bars and queuing up and talking to human beings. But you go to this place called The Wallow, and you go in, and they give you one of these cards. It's this smart card thing. And you pre-fill it with money. So we put like 40 quid on it. And as you'll see on the screenshot there, on every floor is one of these wine machines. There's three floors. What you do is you go up to the machine, put your card in, then you can do one of three things. For 75p, you can get a taster of the wine that you want, so you can try it as many as you like. You go, yeah, I fancy a bit of that. And then, or I fancy a bit of this, red, white, or the other. And if you like it, you can then put the card in again and then get kind of a medium glass or a large glass. And we sat there and got absolutely leathered, and it's absolutely brilliant. But you probably got this where you come from, didn't you?
We've not got that in Leeds, to my knowledge.
Yes! Do we win?
So that's your card, and you tap.
That goes in that machine.
Yeah.
And it's got a touch screen. So on top of every single bottle, it's a little touch screen. You say you want a taster, a medium glass, or a large glass. Press the button, put your glass under, wine comes out, you drink it.
I've never seen this before either. So it doesn't mean it doesn't exist in Birmingham, because I don't go out drinking in Birmingham very much, but I've never seen this system before, even in London when I've been in London. No one's ever mentioned it.
This is actually cool.
It's really cool. And you sit there and you go, oh, do you know what? I don't know if I like that wine or not. So you get a mouthful of a taster, you know, like for 70p. And you go, oh, yeah, I quite like that. Or no, I don't like it. And you move on to the other one. But by the end of the night, you've tried like, you know, 15, 20 different wines.
So you what I like is that wine bar beat Amazon to this content.
Yeah.
Cool. It looks like a great idea, mate. If you like your wines, then you're definitely in.
Exactly. But there's a full review up on BTN if you want to read a bit more about it. But I thought that was something that everyone had, but maybe it's just us. No.
That's really cool.
So the only bar people who are actually there are the people who top your card up. So you walk in. And like I say, every floor there's different types of wine on each floor, so you're always walking around, moving about. But you know, I think it's a new experience in boozing.
Excellent, mate. I like that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is good. We now want one. So everyone that's listening to this podcast now wants a plonk near them, please.
Yeah,
be great. You know, monsoon has. Cool. The end of my road would be even better.
Yep.
Super. Good pick, mate. My cool thing, now I've got a lot of cables around this place, to say the least. I have cables galore around this place. And one of the problems I have is I've got a nasty habit of doing end-to-end, middle-to-end, and then I tie a knot in them. And then I throw them in a drawer, which knackers your cable. It's not very good. So the other day I was sitting thinking, don't do it. Do it properly, especially with the audio cables. I've got quite expensive audio cables that I do that with, which is kind of stupid. So I thought, I'm going to loop them properly. But then I was looping them properly and putting them in my bag. And then when I was coming to pull them out of the bag, they've done that bit where they fall through the inside so that actually you pull the wrong bit out and it's in a big knot. Yeah. So I thought, right, I need some Velcro ties. So I went on Amazon and they've got these, you know, that one that's got the nice, shiny, sexy Velcro bit on one side and then the loop on the other. Yeah. I thought, I'll get one of those. So I looked on Amazon and you can get 50 of the buggers. 50 of the buggers, look. For
£5.99. Wow.
So I bought 100. But the only thing that's happened now that they've come is they aren't as long as I thought they'd be.
In the last story.
Women everywhere.
Not quite big enough, I don't think. But at £5.99, I've got plenty of low ones that are going to go 6 inches long. So you need to get the bigger ones if you've got a serious issue. So, but it's good enough for the smaller cables. Most definitely. Mm. There you go. I've put a link in the chat room. If you want to know any of the cool things that we've got or any of the stories that we talked about tonight on the big show, then all you have to do is go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and search for Thursday the 22nd of March. That'll give you the transcript of the entire room, including the bit where Bob Beach said he agreed with me. So I'm completely right. And Jeff, of course.
So, of course. Prove it.
Super. Ewan, the Loki Wine Deli in Edgbaston, apparently. Have a quick look at that. Is that another winebar.co.uk in Nottingham? Loki doesn't look like that. That looks like an award-winning... No, that's just a standard wine shop. It's not a cool techie dispensary thing.
No.
Not even that. Where can we get a hold of you, Monsieur Campion?
get me at Campaign UK on Twitter. And the chat room is probably the best way to get hold of me. Equally, I've got a couple more reviews that should be up within the week at britishtechnetwork.com/reviews.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Jeffrey, where would you be?
I'm hanging out over at macobserver.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, jgamut, both those places, Daily Observations podcast, iOS Show podcast. I'm kind of like a podcast whore.
Excellent. And welcome back. Welcome. Greedy Boy, where would you be?
I'm at britishmac.com. And also, if you go to iTunes, have a search for British Mac, and you'll find me, which is dedicated to Apple computers. You probably have guessed that by now.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And last but by no means least, Righty Boy, where would you?
Paul's on the Twitter, mate, down in the Slack room, doing the old reviews at BTN, and I've got some stunners coming our way soon.
You have?
Absolute stunners. You're going to love it.
Okay.
But I'll run and buy you first, Paul.
No, don't worry about it. Excellent.
But yeah.
My name's Ewan Rankin. You get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network on at British Tech. Don't forget Carl Swagger every morning plugging away, doing the news show for your delectation. If you ever listen to him, then please support us via subscriptions, because your subscriptions pay for the news show to take place. So please, that would be great if you could. And Carl plugs away very much and does a great job every single day. At 9 o'clock, you'll have 5 minutes of tech news a day to boost you on the way. We'll be back again next week on Thursday as normal. The show will be there. And we've got Mac Show tomorrow at Friday at 4 p.m. So join us then. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.